you can interact with us via email, emsgarage@gmail.com, or you can call us at 206-984-1622. That's 206-984-1622. The EMS Garage.
Okay, I got the DC on the phone there. I want to know if you can handle that call as well. Just confirming you are checking the patient.
Salmonic 22 is on scene.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to the EMS Garage. This is episode number 37, and tonight we're going to be talking about media and the role that it plays in EMS, probably a little bit about the development of media in EMS and some of your favorite shows like Emergency and other things, but tonight we actually have an author, a filmmaker, and an audio podcast pioneer in EMS, at least. And we're going to talk about that role and have the round table discussion that we normally do. I'm sure we'll go off into rabbit trails and other things, but you know, it's my distinct pleasure to welcome Mr. John Bignell, who hosted EMS Live for many years. Hey, John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show, Chris.
Yeah. So what have you been up to? I mean, I hear you're moving on to dead people.
Well, actually, I started out in the funeral home and way back in 95, 94. The funeral home and the ambulance were one, and I went to school and studied to be a funeral director and studied to be a paramedic at the same time. As a 21-year-old, I guess I was 19 when I started, 19-year-old, the funeral home seemed kind of slow. It seemed kind of dead. EMS was definitely a whole lot more exciting.
Great pun.
So that's kind of how I evolved into the ambulance. Having a little toddler, it kind of made shift work really difficult. And a friend of mine who was running a funeral home, she needed an extra staff member, and the 9-to-5 shift just worked. So I moved over.
Well, wow, that's great. Well, thank you for joining us, and I would look forward to your insight on EMS and the media. And joining me as well is Mr. Tom Reynolds. He has written a book. We talked to him 2 weeks ago, and he's graciously agreed to join us at 3 a.m. in the UK again. So hello, Mr. Reynolds.
Good morning. He says, clutching his large bottle of Diet Coke to his chest. Morning.
Very nice. Thanks for joining us. And then our third panelist, really, on the whole idea of media is Thaddeus, and you're going to have to help me with your last name, Stetla. Is that correct?
Stetla. Yes. Stetla. Close.
All right. Sorry, I said the T. Stetla. And he has recently written, directed, produced a movie called Level Zero, and you can go to our website and find the link right there and download it from Vimeo, and it's absolutely free. You can watch all 20 minutes of it, and it is probably one of the highest class productions I've seen in EMS in a long time. So I wanted to get these three gentlemen on to start talking about that, and then I'll introduce the other round table. So welcome, Thaddeus.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You bet. And I have tonight Greg Freese. Hello, sir.
Hi, Chris. It's always great to be a part of the garage. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Mr. Skip Kirkwood from Niagara Falls tonight. Or near Niagara, Toronto. Where are you at? Maybe he's not there.
I think you're disconnected.
I'm getting some feedback from Thaddeus.
All right, we're back.
Okay, there we go. I was like, wow, I can hear myself. All right, well, I hung up on Skip. Maybe if he wants back, he can join us. Mr. Buck Ferris, hello, sir.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah, we're very good, I think. And we have Gary Wingrove, the ever... I think you're everywhere. You should be called Everywhere Grove.
That'll work.
That's awesome. So, So Thaddeus, if we could start with you, and I just want to start with this idea. Well, first, maybe let's go just briefly into the history. Who of you have seen or were a part of this idea of Emergency and saw that show either growing up or have seen it since you came into EMS?
Sure. Well, I started in EMS kind of late in life when I was 26, almost 8-9 years ago. I started EMT, so I've only been in the industry about eight years now. But what got me started in film was simply right around that same time frame, I had picked up a camera when I proposed to my wife, and I had recorded video of everything we did, our kids being born and everything else. And I had all these tapes, and I'm going, well, this is a waste of time. You know, we're sitting here with all this tape and nothing, you know, it doesn't do us any good just sitting there. So I began editing at that time, and, you know, just rough stuff, just very rough family stuff. And, you know, family who wasn't around would send out a DVD every year of how the kids were growing up and trying to make sure that the media aspect was always up to date for all the family. And once things started kind of evolving, I was working in Michigan as a firefighter paramedic when I started taking video of training burns, and we started doing a little more in-depth interviews with some of the people in EMS, and it just started becoming more of an idea of changing the way that productions had become. I had moved out here to San Francisco Bay Area, where I began working with AMR in Alameda County, and it was simply one conversation with our CES department that I said, you know, our communication is just horrible here. I said, you know, we obviously out in the field, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what is making your decisions for us in the field. And so we were left with this real big gap. And so my love of film and wanting to take it to the next level was welcomed by a CES coordinator that was really wanting to get her messages out. And essentially what we started was AMR TV. And that's kind of what started this whole film project in EMS, because what we did is we did a weekly video podcast that would roll inside the deployment center and let all the crews that are coming on and off, new messages that were coming out. It was a better way for people to see, you know, the 3 minutes before they get into their ambulance, what was going on from the management perspective, because no one would really check their pages. No one would check the paperwork they'd pass out with their paychecks. So this was a quicker, easier way, but AMR, of course, is a very governing kind of company. They're very, shall we say, they control a lot when it comes to the media. And so they weren't terribly excited about the fact that a rogue paramedic started doing video stuff, and we actually went from being in deployment to actually going online. And once we did that, that got corporate opening their eyes, and they said, well, we can't have paramedics, you know, just anywhere deciding to videotape stuff out in the field or interview the crew. And, you know, sometimes the interviews went really well, and other ones they told us exactly what they thought and how to improve what we currently had. So it was kind of one of those open forum kind of podcasts, if you will. Well, AMR put a pretty quick stop to that after about a year, and it was at that point that I said, well, they can stop that because it had the AMR TV logo and it had AMR all over it. But I said, they can't stop my, you know, making a movie. And so it was December of last year that I had talked to a few people, and I said, you know what, I just want to start a little project. And it was simply that, a little project that to kind of document what we were going to do, what we do in Alameda County, why we're so busy, what it takes to be a paramedic in this system. And if there's anything I've heard more times than not, it is the comment that people come to the system and just can't believe how busy we are. And it kind of rang, you know, after interviewing several different people, I'm going, okay, well, that has got to be something that we've got to get out there. So the film does discuss that to some degree, but the biggest thing was trying to get AMR and all the resources to come together. And I have to say, once I told them what we were doing, San Leandro PD, Alameda County Fire, and finally AMR, but AMR came through and said, you have all access to all the ambulances, anything you need. I even had access to dispatch to go film there, to get the recordings from them. And they gave me an unbelievable amount of trust. It was kind of nice. So once we got that started, I did have to submit the film to AMR for pre-approval, of course, so that they knew that their name wasn't being tarnished, which obviously was not the goal. But of course, then March 21st happened, and that really has propelled this entire film, I think, to the next level, because it wasn't something that we had really prepared for. But when the Oakland officers were killed in our backyard, it was something that we couldn't ignore, obviously. And that's what started the whole idea of doing a big fundraiser. And it just happened to be EMS week coming up, and we combined a lot of resources and premiered the film on May 18th. So I guess that's the long story of it.
Very nice. And it truly is a high quality production. I mean, I don't want to get too geeky about what camera you used and what type of film editing you used, because it's great. Maybe we could talk about that off air, but I absolutely loved it. Have anybody else on the panel seen that?
I watched it yesterday, and I also thought it was terrific. You know, there's this new trauma or some sort of show coming out on NBC this fall. So for whatever reason, I kind of had that in my head when I started watching Level Zero. And then I was just so pleased at how sort of down to earth and authentic the people were, and that it was really a conversation about EMS and why it's so powerful to the people involved in it, and not whiz bang and first we're going to do this, and then we're going to push an amp of this, and then we're going to shock them, and we got to go fast. And it was just a really solid production, and you know, really left me feeling good about the work I'm doing. And yesterday, I was marooned at a station where I was there for 12 hours and no calls, and so I was feeling a little bit morose about the whole day as it was. And then I thought, all right, well, this is great. It was real, picked me up at the end of the day. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And that was actually one of the things I really wanted to convey. In the beginning, you get this sense of, you know, one man's journey into getting into EMS. But the end of it, I was actually taken back by it, because I didn't know how it was all going to come together. But at the very end, when we have a couple medics and EMTs really telling what it means to them to, and what they see and what they go home with, it kind of pushed me a little bit too, knowing that next year, we've got to one up this. So we've got our eyes set pretty high next year. And of course, we're also looking for the funds to do it as well. So.
And so, understanding how you got started, John, how did you get started with EMS Live, and what was the inspiration to start that? Or it sounds like Thaddeus had something very similar, at least starting a podcast for the company, but how did yours start?
Well, it kind of fits through education. I saw an online show called Your Mac Life, and it was basically a show revolving around the Macintosh computer. And they were using Real Player, really, really kind of archaic streaming technology. And that kind of inspired me to say, well, if these guys could talk about the 1% computer user out there in the early 90s, then maybe I could create a show that would be very similar and provide continuation for paramedics and com- propose an idea that, you know, using nitro in Texas or using nitro in Nova Scotia or wherever you're using it, we use the same drugs for the same treatment, but they necessarily aren't following the same protocols and the same guidelines. If we could learn from each other's errors and learn from each other's experiences, then we could grow as a profession. And the only thing that was dividing us were these borders and our companies, and we really needed to come together as an organization of paramedics and EMS professionals in order to share and expand our knowledge base.
Well, very cool.
I think from hearing your...
Go ahead.
For me, listening to your story there, I found it quite inspiring that the challenges of a paramedic that has an idea and getting their company to embrace it. There's so many roadblocks. The first couple of weeks of going on air, they had an emergency meeting to discuss what does EMS Live mean to Nova Scotia paramedics and how does this affect the company. And a friend of mine was actually in that meeting, and it's quite hilarious hearing her narrate what was talked about and what does this mean and how it's going to change what the internet was going to do and how paramedics talking to each other could really have a negative impact on them. It was all about them. Nova Scotia, my company, was the only thing that ever escorted me out of a conference because they didn't know what to do with my interview and who I'd be interviewing, so they actually removed me from the conference that they sponsored.
Wow. That's pretty funny. So Tom, tell me, I mean, we kind of got a glimpse about how you started yours, but fill everybody in here how you got to writing, and I hope that this podcast might be a little bit more inspiring to people, because we now do have competition from the IAFF, but whatever. I love the competition. Bring it on, people. I love it. But I think it's also flattering to see that so many people in our industry are actually kind of being drawn to this idea of Web 2.0 or whatever it is to get the message across and really start talking about issues that are meaningful to us. I'm no more a star than anybody else is on this show, and we're just talking about issues and we're bringing everybody together. So I think it's very cool to get that. But Tom, tell us how you started in yours.
Oh, it's that same old story. It's, boy writes blog. Blog gets mentioned in newspaper. Publishers come running. But essentially, it's just that feeling that what we do, and this is EMS across the world, what we do isn't really known. And so it's just that desire to let other people know what we're up to. And I think that's it. And, more and more people are blogging and writing about it, and it's only a good thing, because otherwise, people think that what we do is what we do on the television, with Listener and Casualty and ER and all of that. And, I think we can all agree that they're a bit bit fantasy, really.
I
need to...
Go ahead, Greg.
I need to get past the boy writes blog stage. I haven't figured out how to get to the... in the newspaper and then publishers come running stage.
It'll happen.
It's luck.
Okay. I got a question for the group, if you don't mind, though.
Well, go ahead.
Why are we so in the dark? Cops, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a cop show. Everybody loves firefighters. The kids wave the flags. People come by the station bringing free food. And the EMTs and paramedics are the nerds in the basement. Why? Especially when we started out so strong with emergency and some other things, you thought it was going to take. But I'm sorry, who's got thoughts on that?
I want to say something just real quick about that. Just from a film perspective, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead, please.
Please do. Yeah, that's what it's for.
I began this process, of course, with this film, and knowing what I was disappointed with when I go to the movies and I see an ambulance up there, I see the paramedics for about 2.5 seconds, or I see them doing something that just doesn't seem quite real, or it's always been disappointing. And my wife always hates going to the movies with me, because I'm constantly correcting what movie producers should be doing so that we could be proud of us being in that situation. And so that's what drove me to make this film. But then I started thinking, well, if Facebook, Twitter, and MySpace have brought as many users to view my movie so far as it is, because we've got probably well over, I'd say, 20,000 hits on the trailer, and we are hovering on now on the movie. It just was published probably 4 days ago. We are well over a couple thousand hits right now. And what I'm seeing is this is not just a local demand. I've got, over the last 2 days, I've got over 400 hits from Germany and from Australia. There is such a huge demand here for this kind of media, if you will. I'm actually in the process of proposing to an investor a web series about what we do and putting us in a proud light so we can continue this until next year when we have our second movie. So the idea is, are we under the rug right now? I think so, and I think it's mainly because movie producers just have never gotten it right. And knowing that we're coming up from the ground, from the street level on up, I think that gives us a huge advantage over the $15 million budgets. And I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, but I'll also say, too, that as far as even EMS and the media, it's always kind of been bad. And I say that with all due respect for Nicolas Cage's movie, that Bringing Out the Dead, that I absolutely hate and can't stand, because it's such a negative movie about what we do, and it really doesn't. I mean, you know, the side story about what was going on in his life is far more important than. But it makes us all out like we're burned out losers that really can't get to sleep, which, hey, might be true. There's nothing wrong with that. But it doesn't really paint our profession in the light that it needs to be. And, you know, like you said, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a cop show. And you're right, you can't. But you also have shows that, quite honestly, I actually love Rescue Me. Oh my gosh, Dennis Leary is hilarious in that show. But it is, I mean, it's well portrayed and it's well written, and that's the other thing we don't have. So maybe we're coming into this age where we're finding that we need to fill the vacuum with people like Thaddeus and Tom and John that have come in and decided to make a difference in our industry through another media. I mean, maybe it's just taken us this long to grow up. Go ahead, Greg.
Here's the thing, though, is that, you know, what makes those cop shows good is that it's about the characters, and a TV show about the medicine or the emergency isn't nearly as interesting as a show that's about the characters, and then an audience grows attached to those characters. And, you know, I think that's part of why I enjoyed Level Zero so much, is it was about the people. There was the, I don't want to give away too much, but there was a couple patient encounters that were shown in the film, but it was really, the story continued to be about the people and how they work together and why they do what they do. And, you know, Thaddeus, if you're working on a pitch for a show about EMS, you know, strong characters, I think, is what people will watch. And then if you set them in the back of the ambulance or out on the emergency scenes, you know, it will be all that much more interesting.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that's the nice thing about our area, is because we have so many characters.
Yeah, you got characters.
So,
well, maybe our time is now, as far as this is concerned, because, you know, TV always seemed larger than life, and these cop shows are larger than life. I mean, who really has CSI, really? That doesn't even exist. Some people's thoughts about firefighters are just inappropriate. I mean, watch Backdraft, and that's just silliness. And then when you compare the EMS movies, you know, like Mother Jugs and Speed, you go, really? That's what you guys do? Oh, my God. And I think now with the Web 2.0, the nerds have been allowed out of the basement. And if you don't want to create some false mystique about your profession, you want to talk about how it really is, like a reality show or something. Although most reality shows aren't really there. that maybe this is our time because the public's kind of used to us, and finally we can come out and see daylight and talk about what we do in this new medium. And hopefully now it will be accepted and people will finally figure out what we do for a living. And it won't be some stupid mystique. It'll be real. That's kind of exciting, isn't it?
I think part of the problem is if you compare, say, police shows with EMS shows, is everyone understands what the police do. You know, they turn up, they arrest someone, they read them their rights, they go to trial, there's, you know, various shenanigans, and then the bad guy gets put away. Whereas with EMS, as an example, I know loads about the American legal system just by watching, you know, Law and Order. But EMS, it's a lot harder to explain because you're dealing with quite technical things. And also the stories aren't so long because we don't spend that long with patients. And I think that's part of the problem. It's harder to write a good story than it would be for, say, police. And Rescue Me, I mean, I love Rescue Me. I think it's brilliant. But it could just as easily not be firefighters. It could be, you know, dock workers, because Rescue Me is more about the characters. And so I think I agree with you guys when you say, you know, you need the good characters and then the rest will follow. But it's just hard to get that story out.
Well, and I agree to the extent that, I mean, because I look back, did you guys ever see Rescue 911 that was hosted by William Shatner in the late 80s, early 90s?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the main. But it was reenactments and it was really cheesy. But it did the other thing that characters, that show had no characters, minus Bill Shatner. But it had something else. It tugged at the heartstrings of people, and of course, everybody always lived. You know, I think in the whole run of the show that I think one person died. But I mean, that was kind of, it was very fluffy and very, so I think we kind of need that piece of it where we can tug at people's heartstrings, but yet at the same time have good character development through, I think even a good EMS novel that could be made into a movie, or, I mean, things like that that would be huge for our industry would be great. You know, and then John and I could read the the Audible version of that book.
Well, John, you should jump in here because you and I talked several times about trying to create an EMS drama in the sort of radio show style, and even took a small attempt at it with the CE lesson that we co-wrote. Why don't you jump in with what you had talked about then and your ideas?
Well, I totally agree with what everyone's saying. I think there's a huge void, but I think from the public perspective, when you look at the way the public views us, we're not that nice, you know, we're not that glamorous, you know. A little kid watching CPR being performed on their grandmother, there's this big plastic thing going into the belly and we're putting electricity on the chest. It really isn't that nice, you know. It's not the heroic firefighter that's rescuing the cat or the policeman that's rescuing the bad guy. That's grandma you're working on. And I think until we can change the perception, we're always going to be kind of the guy off in the corner, the girl off in the corner, the geek in the basement type persona. And I think we need to reshape our image to the media. I think companies and EMS organizations haven't really tried to connect with journalists, connect with the media, and we'll take movies like the one that just came out that shows paramedics in a different light, and I think that's really important. And to kind of talk a little bit about what Greg was saying, I think there is a great opportunity for paramedics to use their real-life experiences in the form of traditional radio dramas that were popular in the terms of the 1940s, 1950s, that Lone Ranger type of radio story, but telling our story, telling a paramedic perspective, and having it produced by paramedics, using it in continuous education. So I think there's a great opportunity there.
Well, because if I think about it, I mean, my original thought behind the show was, you know, the way it was named was, it was called EMS Garage for a reason, because a lot of the stories I've heard in my career happened in the EMS Garage, because people were standing around after a call and you heard some of the best quote unquote war stories. And while it's hard, and here's the problem, we have this, the best stories don't always translate into people in the public wouldn't see that as a quote unquote good call. They would, somebody else, we're dealing with other people's tragedies. Like he said, you know, somebody's working on my grandma. But
I have
for us, that's
some
awesome.
People at apology parties. Yeah.
I know. I love that look around the room. Like, yeah. And then I was sticking a needle in her neck, and then they're like, I'm like, oops, sorry.
Yeah. Actually, a good friend of mine, who I haven't seen in years, just turned his whole family against him on Christmas one time. Because he was the one guy who was a paramedic. Everybody else had a college degree. They were working in a cubicle. They were doing something different. And he hated holidays. He would go there, and they would all try and turn him to the light side again. They always thought what he was doing for a living was horrible. And he used to just, after a while, his two sisters in particular, to get them to shut up, he'd just tell them something horrible so they wouldn't want to deal with him anymore. And finally, he let one of these stories loose at the dinner table. And the whole family, just horrified, go, how can you do that about somebody you care about? And he said, whoa, right now. You don't have to care about somebody to want to help them. the whole family just, what? And they almost threw him out of the house, and it's just right there. And I've always wanted, through blogging or something else. Now that's a harsh statement. It's weird, but everybody here laugh. You know what I'm talking about. And and even though that may be not worded perfectly right, it caused that response. I would love to try and sit a regular person down and try and at length explain that to them. And I haven't seen a medium that can do it, and I haven't seen a member of the public who wants to sit down long enough to do it either. Yeah. Yes, but what we do is hard to explain. It really is.
Well, there's a certain element of the population that we take care of that is solely based on emotional support that. You know, they call 911 thinking that obviously they are having an emergency, and in reality they are not. And the majority of what we are doing there is just emotional support. And there's an element that if, and I would say that's a good 30 to 40% of the calls that I run out here. Those types of calls, I think if you have literally a web series or have that medium to really focus on and letting people know, you know, we're not the guys who's always sticking needles in. We're not the people that are always pushing drugs or always concerned about putting the pads on. No, we're here to comfort. And there's an element of being able to just deal with those even behavioral emergencies when there's just something that they just need somebody to sit down and listen to them when family won't. And so, I mean, when I think of the web series, I think about all these really tough sociological issues that come up. Like people calling 911 because they don't have a car to go to the hospital. And they really aren't having an emergency. They just don't have a car. So therefore, a lot of these different issues that, you know, different societies face, I think this is the best medium to be able to try to bring awareness. And I'm really hoping that we can get some good writers involved with this project so that it does speak to them and potentially inspire them to change behaviors.
Well, maybe there's the problem. We've always written EMS shows for EMS people, not because I'm the worst too. I agree. I go to a show or I go to somewhere and I'm like, because I did that with Third Watch. I'm like, that's not real. And I did that with ER for a while. Yeah. I'd go, they kind of messed up there. You know, I would hyperinflate everything they were doing on. Well, you know, they're not really exactly intubating, right? Or that's not exact. And when I just didn't, and then finally when I would just let myself go and just enjoy the show for what it was, then it was okay. But here we are talking about EMS and media, and we're trying to talk about what's going to further our profession. It's good characters and an advocate out there in the community, not necessarily something that actually portrays what we do. So the two should never meet, unfortunately, but it should be nearly accurate. So
Close to CSI? How close is Starsky and the Hutch? How close is Backdraft? Yeah, right. I mean, it's a vehicle. I think somebody else said it, though. I think EM is just a poor vehicle for storytelling. or at least the way it's been attempted before. I don't think a lot of people know that we have frequent flyers and that, you know, you don't have to be disjointed like every 20 minutes, something different. That would be disjointed for any sort of thing. That's why Tom's books work so well as, you know, vignette vehicles. And why blogging, I think, works so well. And why documentaries work so well. All attempts to make shows and things out of it just, you know, kind of not work too well because of that angle.
I think what you have to have is you have to have a very good writer for a TV show in order to show something like picking a little old lady up off of the floor, dusting her down and holding her hand for 5 minutes, making her a cup of tea and having that be good drama. And I think it takes a special type of writer to be able to do that properly, and there probably aren't that many that can. Not in a TV format, at least.
Yeah, well, and
That's why I like the web concept. The web series is 4 to 6 minutes, and it really can give a message without, you know, taking the ADD people away from their busy lifestyles too much.
Again, the vignette, which works.
You know. Well, and how it's hard to explain what the positive Samsonite sign is to people. And they don't understand that, you know, when you pull up to the curb and they've got their bags packed, that means you're probably going to the hospital. And I see you guys laugh because we get that. We're like, oh, positive Samsonite, time to go to the hospital. I mean, you just get that. And, you know, to make that a good story, I don't know how. But I think that at least we have people now that are acutely aware that we need more of this, and maybe we can, I don't know, we need 24 for EMTs. We'll call it a UHU of 0.8 or something like that, and UHU 0.8. I mean, that could be the show.
Call don't you think technology trips to Taco Bell?
Do you think technology will allow that medium to grow, that, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, we would not be able to produce a movie, get it onto a viewable medium where multiple thousands of paramedics right around the world to watch? If you had made that movie in the 80s and then try to get it viewed by paramedics around America, it just wouldn't happen. You'd maybe get a couple hundred. It would be a local kind of cult following movie that we passed around at conferences, but you would never have that mainstream acceptance. With the internet, with media centers on TVs, people can now take your paramedic movie and put it in their medium that they're actually watching, you know, maybe their iPod, maybe they're just on their simple computer screen. But technology will allow our story to be told because more and more people will be trying to tell it and trying to express it. And this is a great opportunity for us, I think.
Well, I completely agree, John. And Gary, you've been quiet on the subject tonight. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I just enjoy watching all of the stuff that people are doing. Any of the projects that you all are working on are really great for our industry, and it would be helpful if we could get some of the other players to line up and do really great things as well.
I think that's one of the biggest things that I've found recently is there's now a lot of people coming out of the woodworks to contact me to want to start doing this, where we might have a premiere, let's say, at, you know, 20, 30, 40 different theaters nationwide every year during EMS week as a fundraiser for individual communities. And when I started getting these phone calls from North Carolina, Wisconsin, New York, New Jersey, it was just amazing to me that these people were interested in a movie I actually wasn't even done making yet. The trailer was up and we were sitting here going, wow. You know, so a couple things fell through and no premieres went outside of California. But the nice thing is that there is an interest. And I didn't necessarily expect that this soon before the even movie was out. But now that it is, I can see as long as the resources, or we have a way of pulling together the people that are interested in, let's say, a writer. If we do have a great writer, you know, I know that I'm willing to donate just about any piece of what I have to try and get this next project off the ground. And I've got a lot of people who are standing behind me now to make sure that we do this next year. So it's just a matter of starting to get these resources together.
And, well, Thaddeus, have you been contacted by any major studios or anything to say, hey, you're a good filmmaker, why don't you come do stuff for us?
Absolutely not. And that is really not my interest in what I do. I have submitted the film to Sundance, Cinequest, Slamdance, and a few other film festivals, but that's just to get more press out there about what we do and to get more people to see the movie. But realistically, you know, I am my own production company, and I'm teaming up with people who are passionate about filmmaking and are going to be able to help me in this endeavor with EMS Films. And that's just where I want to keep it in a low budget, because not everybody. My whole goal, I think, in the end, is if I could get 200 agencies to say donate or pay for advertising in the realm of about $500 each. What I was able to do with this $10,000, I can tell you, with $100,000, we're making masterpieces. And so that's my point.
Yeah, and stuff like Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog really changed, you know, how a lot of people perceive as being able to make money doing this. All sorts of there's different ways. Do you actually have somebody who might give you $100,000 to do one of these things?
I actually do. I actually got a couple people who now have seen the premiere, and we had over 700 people in this premiere, and we raised over $14,000 for our benefit. And so that just tweaked the owner of the theater. He was just unbelievably happy. That was the biggest event he's ever had, and it just brought a ton of great press to the theater for being able to do something like this. So he's contacting me about saying, I want to get into the other side of the movie business. What do you got in mind? And I said, as a matter of fact. So, yes, I'm hoping to advertise and figure out how that dynamic would work with other agencies, because I'd love to fly to Florida for 2-3 weeks, film an EMS system out there. And maybe that's what the film is about next year. You know, so there's just so many ideas that we can make this about to help promote it from coast to coast, that, you know, that we're not limited by any means.
Wisconsin's a great place to make a film. Especially in January, you could get a really interesting slice of EMS here in January.
So is Halifax, I might add. Lovely town.
We're kind of a combo of ice road truckers / EMS.
I know, they get a show and we've got nothing. I'm telling you.
That's so true.
You get a lot of banjo playing in Kentucky if you wanted that. You can get Burt Reynolds running around in a rubber suit. Anyway.
Wow, no, we've really gone off track here. That's crazy. Wow.
But you said we were going to be rat holes.
No, rabbit trails, not rat holes. So.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think Burt Reynolds might classify as a rat hole. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I just never, you know, we keep on talking about niche markets with podcasting, with text, with magazines, with articles and things like that. It's different to point that video weapon at a niche market. And the few attempts I've seen that people tried to do it have been wildly successful. And I wonder why more people aren't giving it a shot, but I applaud you for doing it.
Well, thank you. I honestly think that this is what made this possible. We combine a benefit for EMS people, well, police, but we had the beginning of National EMS Week. We had a documentary about EMS, and I think combining all these different elements to pull an industry together during a week in which we're supposed to recognize each other, it couldn't have been better as far as the timing. And that is what's launched this in a number of different ways. So I think if we use what we learned from this time and how the social networking sites propelled the online visits and how we were able to do it, because if it wasn't for Twitter or Facebook, we wouldn't be anywhere near what we were. So I'm excited to, you know, kind of pull this in a whole new direction as far as having staff to be able to make these social networks, because that took a lot of time, unfortunately.
Yeah, isn't that the bummer of this whole deal? I find that the busier, you know, the more listeners we get, the more I have to be on top. Because I Twitter like 3 or 4 times a day, if I'm lucky. And, you know, just staying on top of all the Facebook and, oh my goodness, I completely agree with it, that is. It's tough, but it's important. I mean, it really brings in people. Hopefully after this interview, you'll get another 8,000 views, hopefully.
Oh, I hope so. Vimeo, I think, can handle the hits, so that'd be great.
I've been pounding out probably a dozen tweets since we started about this topic.
Yeah, so. I saw that. That's great.
I'm a serial Twitterer. I can't help myself.
Yeah, you're definitely addicted, but you have way more followers than I do. Someday I'll...
Well, you just got to say yes. Start following Guy Kawasaki, and they'll follow him to you.
Guy Kawasaki? Really, the guy that did the Isuzu commercials? That dude?
No. That was Guy Isuzu, wasn't it? So Guy Kawasaki is author of a book called Reality Check and The Art of the Start, business blogger, venture capitalist.
What's his Twitter?
At Guy Kawasaki.
Actually, he's helped the garage and all our shows by putting them on, what is it, alltop.com?
Yeah, paramedic.alltop.com.
Yeah, he's only got 126,000 people following him.
Yeah, a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people check him out.
So
I have a Twitter account, but I'm not a big fan of it. I think Twitter is going to crash and burn here very quickly.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Once Paris.
That's why you probably had people saying that to you about podcasting 10 years ago, John. Oh, John, why are you getting so involved in this podcasting thing? That's not going anywhere.
That internet's going to fall down too. It's terrible.
Just a bunch of jokes. The Twitter thing. Finally, when Kutcher leaves and everybody else like kind of loses interest with it, it's going to be left to people who were there before, which is just a fine audience of a bunch of tech people rapidly interacting with each other, which is probably what it needs to be.
But is Twitter any different than any other instant message platform? Like, if you look at ICQ and some of the old chat programs, Twitter is just a different mobile version of what we've always had. It really isn't anything innovative. It's just unique because now I have it on my phone.
I think that's the thing about it. There's so many uses for it. It's in your pocket. I mean, and that's how I use it. I log into Twitter maybe once every 2 weeks on a real screen. All I do is on the phone. It's the only thing I can carry around with me like that.
So, well, here's the thing about Twitter is I can say everything in 140 characters or less, which makes me really happy because I'm a very direct and to the point person, and I just want to get things going and let's get done and let's move on because I just no more superfluous English. I just need you and R and things like that.
Well, no, see, I look at it differently like that. I look at it as, coming from an English background, I look at it as a challenge to write with economy. And write something meaningful in 140 characters and have it paint a picture in your mind or have it be funny. I hardly ever use it for communication. I've got this thought in my head and I want everybody else to think it too. How can I do that in 140 characters? And it's tighten me up as a writer, and I hope it's done other things. But there's so many different uses for Twitter. People come up with crazy stuff for it, and it's the only thing that's in your pocket like that. Of course, iPhones and the iterations of them later may change that, where basically the main internet's in your pocket. So I don't know what will happen to Twitter after that. But you're right. It is something we have. I think it's going to be given back to us, though, once Paris Hilton is done with it and everybody else knows.
I think the Google wave is going to just destroy it all. I think Google is going to look at Twitter as being something that was and people remembered as ICQ was the instant messaging platform, and it's going to be remember Twitter. I think Google Wave, some of the new applications, Facebook, these applications as phones advance, why do I want to limit myself to 140?
Right. Yeah. I think the thing about Google Wave is Twitter is very easy because it's just SMS and people know how to do SMS. I think Google Wave may be a bit more complicated and therefore not, you know, you won't have Paris Hilton able to, well, understand it, to be honest.
I'll be okay if Paris Hilton can't understand it. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think everybody's okay with
that. Oh, us nerds will love it. I'm already planning ways of using it.
Let's not be so exclusive. Let's let anybody find whatever use they want for whatever medium and application, you know? If you're not interested, don't follow the rich and famous. Follow the people you want to follow.
Twitter's gotten pretty big. Yeah, it's the thing in your pocket, and you know, I say that every once in a while, and sometimes I get pissed off. But yeah, I don't follow these people, and they don't affect me. And sometimes it's like saying that Paris Hilton can't use email. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. you know, it is a medium that is in your pocket and in your phone. But I don't know. You know, it's probably why all of us are here. I would not be on this cast if it were not for Twitter, and that movie might not have gotten made. And I wouldn't know about Tom Reynolds and the rest of it either. It's amazing how many people you can meet in 140 characters. Apparently, all those other words are superfluous.
And I think that Twitter may revolutionize how we meet people that we are now maybe not only acquaintances with, but friends and colleagues and things that we can do over and above. But let's get back on media, because we've for some reason drifted into Web 2.0, which is part of the media. Maybe that's the point. This is the way we interact and we can exchange ideas. I've met so many people on Twitter now that I'm like, I can't wait for the next big EMS expo or something to meet all those people that I've been talking to all this time, or to get that face to face meeting and have a pint with, you know. I tried to meet John Bignell when I was in Halifax, and it didn't work, but I met his future brother-in-law, and holy cow, he puts on a great show. If you ever go to Halifax, look up John Bignell, because he's an awesome guy. There you go. There's 8,000 more people for you, John.
Thank you.
Well, that's one of the things that's occurred to me, though, is that for years I was a paramedic by myself. It was lonely. You got in the truck with your partner, and whether you liked him or not, that was the person who talked to you all day long, and all your experiences died on the truck. You know, people used to talk about it. What happens on the truck stays on the truck. And for better or for worse, Web 2.0 and smartphones, it's not like that anymore. For the first time, I know people all over the country, and all of a sudden, we're podcasting and talking, and here I am chatting with a paramedic in England, like, all day long. And here I am tonight talking to a filmmaker and everything else. This is finally our medium. We're not alone anymore. We can talk to each other, and look at what happened in such a short time. And the words I'm speaking now are going to be heard by about 8,000 people. That's nuts.
I was going to say, I don't think you can have any one of these media without having it actually combined with the rest of it to see the success that any one of these is going to have. I certainly think that Twitter wouldn't be nearly as successful if it wasn't for Facebook, and you know, Facebook wouldn't be nearly as successful if it wasn't for MySpace. And so that the transition of different ways of messaging and getting the information out, you know, it's just absolutely fundamental that they all come together. They've all been part of how each of us have been able to get out there to reach the masses. And that's the one thing I think has been the most gratifying, is learning how each of them intertwines, and how there's, you know, companies like TubeMogul that you don't have to upload your videos to every single website. You got one company to upload them all, you know? So it's these little things that make media, you know, getting your message or media out to the masses, that makes it easy, fun, actually, and seeing exactly what the analytics are at the end of the day.
Before the internet, you know, the only way of talking to other people was face to face, or by these gatekeepers who set out these television shows. And then with the internet, you know, it's got easier and easier and easier. And Twitter's just really the fine point of ease of use. And so whatever happens next, it will probably be something that's even easier to use. And I wish I could see what it was, because then I'd invent it and sell it to Google for loads of money. But it's just the way the world is changing. It's wonderful. I love it.
Do you think that this new media and this new communication tool is going to kill conferences? They look at for speakers that they request for upcoming conferences, it's over a year, and they say we filled for next year's conference, so we're actually, you're applying for 2 years from now. If I'm creating a conference profile and writing an article that I'm going to present at this conference 2 years from now, how can I present on technology, and are these conferences now obsolete because information's so up to date?
Well, and I
think $4 a gallon gasoline is a bigger threat to conferences, and then the lack of advertiser money is what's going to make conferences obsolete. But I have two presentations coming up at the EMS Expo in October. One's about social media and social networking for EMS, and the other's about online education. And it's just a matter of weeks before they start hassling me about submitting my handouts for the sort of pre-conference program. But your point is a good one, John, that it doesn't make much sense for me to do a whole lot of preparation, because I might show up at the conference and talk about the old thing and not the current hot thing.
Here's the question. Is the point of a conference the things that you learn at the conference, or is it more what you get up to in the corridors between the conferences? Because whenever I've gone to a conference, it's not necessarily stuff that I've learned, but it's the people I've met, moving between the different rooms, having a cup of coffee. I think that's the real strength of conferences.
But I've done a lot more of that through wiring than I have at a conference. I think that's an issue too. For instance, what's the attendance at the usual conference? At the usual EMS Expo, how many people are on the showroom floor and in the classrooms at any one time?
Well, funny you should mention that. I'm going to have Joe Cavelli on in a couple of weeks from EMS Expo, because we're going to be featured there, but I'm thinking 8,000 maybe. Not a lot.
We've got 8,000 right now.
Yeah, great.
You're going to have to edit that out, because Joe doesn't work for EMS Expo anymore.
What? Oh, God. Hang on. Hang on 1 second.
Put a mark in there.
I'm pausing the podcast. So, just knowing that I don't know where we were before that. Does anybody know? I'm lost now.
Well, I think the conferences will continue to be relevant for the point that Tom just made about the connections you can make in the exhibit hall or between the rooms as you meet people from far off places. But the interesting thing is I've met a lot of people at conferences, but I've never had sort of follow-up ongoing connections with them that have blossomed into something more, like the connections I've made with some of you through Twitter, and now all of a sudden we're podcasting once a week and conspiring to take over the world. So I don't know what it is.
A pocket full of business cards that never goes away.
Yeah.
A pile of them on your desk that never get called. Yeah.
Yep.
No, but there are the new and shinies on the showroom floor, though. That won't go away. People got to go out and see and touch these products. And I see that expanding more than anything else. Because there's something scary about buying a $20,000 piece of equipment off of the internet without having seen it. And that $4 a gallon gas is making these people think twice before they drive a salesman out to go show you something. That's true.
Well, and I also remember we were talking about the number of attendees at these conferences too, because that will greatly affect some of the other issues, like Greg was saying earlier, the advertiser dollar and things like that. But Tom, to answer your question, as far as I think that there is something to be gained at the conference in the session, but I think it's equally as important out of the session. I think that the coming together of ideas can be made virtually like we're doing now, but it takes it's that face to face and the energy you get from a bunch of people sitting around talking about something that really will push things forward. So I think it's all of those things. All right. Well, hey, so Thaddeus, you know, we are at an hour now, so we could probably continue on with the podcast. But I like to keep us at an hour because, you know, people generally don't have 2 hours to listen to us, because I could go on about this topic all night. But what's your next project look like? Are you just working on something for next year? Are you going to do something in between? What are you doing?
Well, yeah, the goal here is, now that we've really seen the excitement from so many different areas, different EMS systems across the country, really, I think we want to capitalize off the energy we've created from Level Zero, the premiere, and people seeing the movie, that we want to start a web series. This web series is being shaped as we speak. We've got a couple, we've got a director on board. I've got a producer on board. I've got an editor on board. I've got a number of different EMS folks that have volunteered to start looking at the idea of the script. And so we're trying to make sure that we take Level Zero to the next level with regards to storytelling and having enough of an interest to keep it going for between now and the movie next year. And in between there, of course, there are a couple other films that we are in the process of that actually don't have anything to do with EMS, but those are just going to help bring about better storytelling for the EMS films that we do, you know, come about. So I'm hoping that between now and, say, the end of the year, that this web series will be finished, and we're hoping to do 10 to 12 episodes, and they will lead up to next year's film to kind of bridge the gap, if you will.
Very cool. Tom, so, you have another project coming out very soon, another book.
Oh, it's out. It came out, what day is it today? Came out Friday. So that's out and about, and yeah, it's great. What else? Yeah, so that'll be available for free download shortly. We're just making it a really nice package to download. But talking about other media, some scripts have been commissioned for TV series based around the first book. We'll see how that goes. And heading back just quickly, because I was frantically Googling, talking about conferences. There was one conference in the UK about ambulances, and it's not being held this year. So maybe that's a sign of things to come as well.
Maybe the sign of things to come too is maybe more regionalized conferences where you can get specialized attendees or something like that that really want to come in and focus on that area. You know, I've often wanted to do a Rocky Mountain EMS conference or a Rocky Mountain leadership conference or something like that, so that we could really draw on the states that are here. You could drive here in a day, come to the conference for 2 or 3 days, and then go home. I mean, that to me would be the perfect conference if you could do something like that. So maybe that's what we're heading to. Maybe we're seeing the next revolution in conferences in our world. Who knows? So, John, what about you? Are you doing anything in EMS anymore, or no?
When they call me, I do a couple casual shifts here and there, but they don't seem to call me anymore. I don't know. But I'm actually looking at buying a newspaper. I want to, believe it or not, a newspaper. But yeah.
What?
Dude, do you understand that they're all like going out of business, right? And the cost of print is like crazy.
I think you have
a deal. Wow. You're
John,
ballsy,
you have an
man.
Obsession with death.
You're bald.
I think so.
he's got a morbid sense obsession. Yeah.
I think somebody should be paying you to take their newspaper.
Well, that's what my wife said. You just need a little hobby money that you can use for these little projects you want to do. I'm like, yeah, that'd be too bad. I'd love to have a little hobby fund. But this newspaper, it's kind of neat because it's a local-based niche kind of community newspaper, and they're thriving, actually. They're doing really, really well on this. The editor actually passed away, so that's kind of I had the inside scoop that it was for sale. But I think it's a kind of a unique opportunity to really connect with the community I live in and create a newspaper that might... I think you can do a lot better than it is and incorporate some of the technologies that are out there. And I don't know, I kind of got my eye on it and I'm going to look further. I would like to kind of comment on the conference issue that you just mentioned, and where's that going? I do think when you look at the PodCamp conferences that are happening, I think EMS needs to have an EMS camp where if you go to it, you speak at it, and it doesn't cost anything.
That would be, you know, kind of like a, kind of like the, have you guys heard of the meeting? We actually highlighted that show or that conference here on the podcast where it's the Eagles meeting that's held every year, and it's 10-minute sessions, and people come in, present a topic, and they move on to the next topic, you know, and it's very, you know, you can have 10 PowerPoint slides or less. I mean, it's very fast, and but it's very interactive that way, and it's a way to get a whole bunch of new ideas all at once. And you know, I really see kind of a cool way we could mix data and EMS media into a conference. Boy, I'm really getting crazy now, but boy, I'm not willing to host the first podcast EMS media conference, but it could be a good idea. Hold it in LA or someplace warm, please. That's all I'm saying.
I think combining that with like the TED conference, just unbelievable. I think there's a lot of ideas coming out of there that, and they have people there with like how much money to just say that is a great idea. I'll give you $500,000 to run with that. So
now there's a really good idea. Boy, I could use $500,000. Anybody, you know, little small studio in my home. You know, things like that. Yeah, I want to be the Leo Laporte of EMS. That's all I want to do. That's all I'm saying. Not that I idolize the guy or anything. Well, you know, maybe this is the beginnings of something really cool in EMS, bringing together these media types, and maybe we can have a small South by Southwest or TED conference or something. You know, what's the podcast one that goes on every year in October? I can't think of that one.
The New Media Expo.
Yeah, the New Media Expo. That's a great one. That would be perfect. Something like that. Or maybe we just all meet there and, you know, throw back a pint and talk about our woes in EMS. But, you know, I'm just, like I say, I'm so excited about this idea of media and EMS, obviously, since we're doing it. But, so I don't know. I don't know where this goes, but I hope we have more discussions on it because, you know, it's the EMS Garage. We really never have conclusions. We just have more thought and thought processes moving in. So Greg and Buck and Gary, any last words before we call this one a wrap?
Just my last word is that I've been eager for quite a while to help convene an online EMS conference. So if you've got a listener that's wants to see that idea through to fruition, they should contact me, and they should look for me on Twitter at @gfreeze.
All right, gfreeze. Buck,
I think we have the staff here to get that done if it was ever going to get done.
Yeah, we are gathering minions, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well, the other big idea I've got is an open source first responder textbook. So we can hammer that out another time.
Ooh, see, now that would be cool. Open source.
It's funny you said that.
Ooh.
It's all because I was just recently, I've been talking with doctors in the area about paramedic training, and paramedic training has notoriously been dry, and it's very textbooky, and all the scenarios that are ever filmed are filmed in such a way that, well, to put the people to sleep more than they do any good. And obviously, we are so conditioned to watch CSI or House and all the animations. So the goal in an educational setting would be to create films that when you see somebody getting shot, you actually follow the bullet, you see what the interventions do by covering the chest with an Ashman seal, and you see the chest wall moving as they're, you know, doing CPR and showing how the heart's actually compressing. So it's visually in your face, just like it is in any of these TV shows. And I've actually been in touch with animators from CSI, and it's very affordable to do this. It's just, well, I don't have the funds in my pocket. So, but yeah, these concepts of education can be taken to the next level very easily.
Boy, that would be cool to really have. Oh my gosh. Now you're talking. And the other, did you guys ever read books as a kid that where they were stories where you would, it was like choose your own adventure books, where you get to the bottom of the page. So why couldn't we make EMS learning a little bit like that, where it's like full motion video a little bit to that degree, where you could stop a case in the middle and then have the teacher lecture on, okay, now, what do you think they ought to do here, blah, blah, blah. And then you, I mean, with DVDs, it would be very easy to do something like that to move ahead or to go, oh, gee, now you feel.
To get you there, too.
Oh, see, there you go. See, there you go. Yeah. So, I don't know. I know I'm crazy in a lot of these ideas, but Thaddeus, you have, that would be awesome. That would be a way to move us to the next level, really, is to start looking at ways we do not only our education, but conferences and just ways that we can really look at what we do to people and not necessarily in a bad way. I mean, doing direct laryngoscopy to actually see the chords and visualize that, that's a hard skill to show. But if you could animate that and really show that with, or you could even use live patients for that and really show that, oh my gosh, what a great skill and concept.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And I've talked with people to make this a reality, and I've actually got the whole marketing proposal on that concept written because I've been really eager to take education for paramedics to the next level. And that just makes sense to me.
Well, no offense to the people who made that airway cam video. Have y'all seen this?
Oh, yeah.
$350, $400 to buy that video, and I just want to saw my own head off while I'm watching. the visuals aren't that bad, but just you know, some guy that they dug up from Mr. Bignell's nursing home. And now with direct laryngoscopy and the whatever he mispronounces every word there is, yes, this can be done differently. And if you can sell that for $350, my God, one of you 8,000 listeners in here, fund this, please. Make this happen.
Do us all a favor, please.
Yeah, please don't let Buck saw his head off, because then he will be John Bignell's problem.
I've actually thought about showing the AirCam video without audio and just narrating it myself because I can't handle it anymore. But
see, I'm jealous. You guys have got video. We just have PowerPoint.
Oh, brutal.
Yes, PowerPoint. Nothing but PowerPoint.
I hate PowerPoint.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I'm a nerd and I put it up tonight. Yeah.
Hey, bullet points don't kill people. PowerPoint presenters kill people.
That's great. That's true.
You don't have to read everything.
Yeah. Yep. Let's have a EMS Edcast sometime about PowerPoint.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we'll do that during our technology portion in August. Maybe we could do that. We're going to highlight that. I'd like to highlight some online things. Buck and I are going to talk about that because I think we could do some really cool things there. Last thing, cell phone video has really taken our profession to the next level this week. I'm only going to talk on this briefly because it just popped up in my email. The Oklahoma trooper giving the chokehold to the paramedic. I just... Oh, it drives me nuts.
Remember that was brutal video. Yeah.
I know, it was terrible. And it was just a bad scenario all around. I mean, I wish they could all just kiss and make up and sing Kumbaya, but the trooper was wrong. I mean, we all know that. The paramedic may or may not have been wrong, who knows, before that. But it doesn't matter. The trooper was wrong to even pull him over and get his big gun in the way.
Well, how many people have flicked you off while you're driving Code 3? Did you get out and choke any of them?
I thought about it.
You know, I've seen, so I actually got on a, I was interested. I got on a cop site that was talking about that, and you would be surprised at the just bald defense of it. But nobody ever said that. I mean, if you were going to get out and choke everybody who cut you off while you were driving Code 3, there would be blood running in the streets. I mean, that would be the end.
So true.
Why are you getting upset about that? Just relax. I don't care what's going on. I really don't. It was just stupid. Anyway, it's funny. Number two video on YouTube, and God, it had like 500,000 views when I saw it a couple of days ago. And apparently, some people are upset about it. Hopefully, they won't do that anymore. I've got my own story about the highway patrol around here that I won't go into right now. But I've seen some weird behavior lately,
and especially that. The video caught on the BART cop out here in Oakland when he shot that kid.
Mm, yeah.
All caught. That just was, that's a little too frightening of a I mean, he didn't stand a chance.
Yeah. So. Well, in Tom's neck of the woods, you've probably got five cameras trained on you at any one time. Anyway.
Pretty much all the time, yeah. Yeah.
By the government and then with a cell phone videos. You could probably, you know, you got 15 views of every event that ever happened.
And of course all the teenagers shoot their own videos and oh dear. Yes, yes. Fun and games. You have to be a bit careful. Make sure if you're going to give a patient a piece of your mind that the ambulance doors are closed.
Well, it won't be too long, apparently, according, because Tom, wasn't it you telling us that last week that they're getting ready to put some kind of tracking on every ambulance or something, Big Brother?
Oh, it's already on every ambulance, tracking on every ambulance. We're getting hand portable radios that can be tracked, and yeah, also that our management can then listen in on any conversation in the ambulance cab.
Yeah, they can just turn on the radio to transmit any one time. My batteries will be out of my radio so quick.
Oh, you know what? We don't care. If they want to listen to us slagging them off all the time, far be it from us to stop them.
I wonder why they would want that information. Like, what? Why would they want to be able to? I can see from an emergency perspective or a paramedic's down, let's tune into that radio so we can figure out what's going on. I can see the benefit, but I see a huge negative out there that they can eavesdrop. And why would a company want to have that out there?
I see boredom. Who is paying that guy to sit around and listen to all that chewing and flatulence and spitting and everything else that goes on in a cab? That would be just mind-numbing to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got to realize a lot of our stuff is motivated by our 8-minute target. So they don't want to sit in the hospital too long. If we spend too long at hospital, they start sending snarky messages down to us. You could have just done a suspended child, cardiac arrest child, and 28 minutes later there's a message down saying, are you ready for another call? So, I think it's all tied into that.
Well,
we don't care.
But it sounds so nice when you say it that in the UK it's just snarky. It doesn't sound like they're rude at all. They're just like little messages saying, Could you please get in service? You know, something like that. I don't know. It seems like that, but whereas from here, just be really rude comments from our dispatchers. But anyway, I just wanted to touch on that because it was something huge this week that really sent everybody a Twitter, if you will, pardon the pun, and just really talking about it. And I think that it's something on our mind. And you know, I really wish that the Oklahoma chief. Of the highway patrol there would come out with an apology, because I really think that needs to be done. And he, right, wrong, or indifferent, he knows when his trooper was out of control, and he could have nipped this in the bud and really stopped something quickly if he had done that. So anyway, that's all from the ranch this week. Join us next week when we bring you more weekly insight and news and information from the EMS Garage. And I'd like to thank John and Tom and Thaddeus for being on with us, especially for this special episode. And then always, as always, Greg, Buck, and Gary. Buck is Buckman on Twitter. Gary is G Freeze. Gary Wingrove is not sure if he's on Twitter. Maybe he is. Are you the real Gary Wingrove?
I am.
Just Gary Wingrove, right?
Yeah. And Chris, do you have anybody to plug tonight?
No, I don't, unfortunately. I'm working on the sponsorship. So if there's an advertiser out there that wants to advertise with us, we would always love that. We're working through that, and we're almost there. So we'll be back with a sponsor, I'm sure, very soon. So thank you guys very much, and join us next week on the next EMS Garage.
Thank you.